laughing already on the podcast. I can't tell you how psyched I am about this, because this is the founding member of Wilson Phillips. This is Carney Wilson. Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm so glad to be here. You're awesome.
Oh, my God. And we're not wearing any clothes right now, just so you know.
Oh, yes.
It just was the way we decided to do this.
And I've got you majorly excited.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And so when I saw Carney Wilson, I'm like, of course. Like, there's so much I would want to talk to you about. And we were just sharing pictures of each other's kids.
Yep.
Yours 4 and 2.
And 8.
Four and eight. Mine's 12 going on 13, and you go on tour. Your husband plays guitar in the band.
Yeah.
And you're touring all over the country. You were just at Disney. You did 6 shows. And you go off for like a few days at a time with the kids, but anything more than that, they stay home, and you were able to work that out.
That's right.
Wow, yeah. That's hard.
It's so hard. It's hard when one parent has to leave. When
yeah.
both leave, it's really tough. But they're in the groove now.
Yeah.
You know, they know that we go, and I tell her, you want to go to that expensive school? Well, I got to pay for that school. You know, she's Lola, the older one. She's very cool. She loves her school so much, and I tell her, your school is $33,000 a year. It's disgusting, but...
Why are you telling her that? You're going to make her feel guilty
and
self-conscious.
No, I want to know the reality of life. It's not... It's like, I don't know. I don't...
Yeah.
Some people wouldn't. I choose to share it with her. I want her to know the real deal.
Right.
You know, it's not like a weird pressure thing, like making her feel guilty. It's just like,
this is the truth,
you know?
Yeah.
It's an incredible school. She's lucky to be there. And, you know,
I do that with my son, actually, because he... You know, we live in New York. He goes to a nice school. And like I do, when he sort of, if there's with every kid, there's those moments where they're not trying as hard. And I kind of, then all of a sudden I go off and I'm like, I'm paying good money for
this. Totally. You rub it in their face a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Do you want to be homeless? Because I'll put you.
It's actually daily with me. I'm like, okay, you don't want to do your homework. You go to the basketball. You know, and poor Lola. She's like, Mom, you know, oh, but it's great. It's funny because. It's weird, like a lot of celebrities' kids go there, and I don't feel, you know, I saw Halle Berry and her husband, Olivier, Jesus Christ, I almost needed an oxygen mask when I saw them. They were so pretty.
I know, they are beautiful,
I wanted to slap them. I wanted to fucking slap them. I could barely breathe. I had trouble breathing. I was like, oh, I'm trying to take a breath. My knees started shaking, and I was like, oh, and first of all, this is what's even more annoying. She was right ready to give birth. Yeah. I didn't even see a belly.
Half an ounce of fat on her.
That
right?
made me really mad. So, you know.
Did you hold her down and stuff like a Subway sandwich in her mouth? You bitch.
Oh, yeah. She needs to eat some pie. But I, you know, it was just cool because they were, and I thought, God, look at where we are. But not that makes the school great. It's just a trip.
Yeah.
To see, and like J-Lo's kids go there and Rod Stewart. And
well, how is that? You know, because I live in New York, but it's not such a one company town the way this is, and not necessarily in a good or a bad way, but, and I wanted you to speak to this as being one of those kids, but to be a kid in a celebrity environment, whether you're now in this case, your kids are, children of a celebrity, but you know, with your father being Brian Wilson, famous founding member of the Beach Boys and brilliant musician, like how do you sort of keep it normal for these kids? Well, you've got some stories that shows it wasn't all that normal all the time.
Yeah, right.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I know.
How do you manage that? And you have history that a lot of these parents don't have, right?
Right. Yes.
Like a lot of these actors that we're talking about, we're not children of famous people.
True.
So you learn something good and bad from that.
Totally. You know, my mom... Marilyn, my mother, was always like really down to earth and really cool and kind of like just, she was young. She got married at 16, had me at 20.
How did she meet your dad?
The Beach Boys had a concert in 1961.
Wow. So they're just kids.
The first year they were
19-year-old kids probably. Something?
Totally. He was like 19 and she came to a concert. She was 14.
Wow.
And
That's unbelievable. That age to let 14. A kid, a 14-year-old kid, right, go to a concert.
To a concert, and she had some hot chocolate, and he said, "Can I have a sip from the stage?" She gave it to him, and then that was it.
Wow.
And you know, but she was a baby having a baby, and she, and then you know, dad got into that weird drug thing for a long time, and she was really raising almost three children. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And but she always was really straight up with me, and I'm straight up with my kids too. And I remember being just 6 years old and her saying to me, "Your father has a problem with drugs. Mm. He's not normal, but he's a genius, and he's not going to be able to be a father to you."
Yeah.
And she was always so loving, and I could do a whole hour on this alone, but it's
feel
a very,
free.
It's
this
a,
is fascinating.
It's a very painful part of my history, but it's also a part. I also feel very lucky and very proud, and I always have been. And it wasn't until I really started delving into his music, when I started to really appreciate just the kind of mark that he's made on you know, music. I'm a fan of his. Yeah. And then I realized that it was some of that love of harmony was passed down to me, and it's passed down to Lola, my daughter, as well. She's blowing my mind. I'm seeing her play the piano and sing in harmony. She was singing harmony at 3 years old.
Right.
And that's genetics. But I keep it real, and I try to have humor be the base of all of it. Just be lighthearted about it, and that people just do the best they can.
Well, you know what's unique about you that always stood out, and your reality series a couple of years ago that really came through was you're one of the few musicians with a real personality. Mm. You know what I mean? You talk to some musicians and you can see the genius in them or the brilliance in them, but I mean, I could see how you're excelling in the talk genre.
Thank
on television
you.
Because you're so sweet and likable and outgoing, but yet also a great musician
Thank
and
you.
Performer. Is that from your mother's side? Is that because your dad wasn't necessarily known as a sort of a dynamic personality?
Right.
Where does that come from? Is that more your mom or your grandparent? Where's
you know, people, my mom always said that no one has the right idea of who Brian Wilson really is. Mm. She's always said that because before he, in his teenage years, and he had such a difficult upbringing, but in his teenage years, he actually, he was extremely spontaneous and a real like wacky sense of humor and really just he's always been eccentric and the drugs really sort of like exacerbated the troubling paranoia part of his mind.
Right.
And I think every genius is troubled to some degree, but it's like my mom would always say, well, before he really got into those heavy duty psychedelics, he was a different person. And
what was that person?
And that I reminded her of him.
Right now.
Right
way
now.
You are.
Right. And so he was very spontaneous and funny and kind of out there and loves, he still likes to make people laugh.
Yeah.
He loved to get a reaction. And that's my thing. And that's what I've done since I'm little.
Is that some of your mom in you? Which
yes,
your
it is.
Yeah.
Mom is like a warm Jewish girl.
Yeah.
That's what she's like. She's just...
Well,
everybody.
I'm a little nuts, and my wife is like that.
Yeah.
I think you need, I don't know if your husband is like that, and you're, like, if you and I married, we'd probably have, like, unbelievable sex and then kill each other right afterwards, right?
The roof would blow up.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The,
you're, like, you're a spark of energy when you walk in the room.
Huh.
You really are, in a good way.
Thank you.
And you know, somebody asked Charlie Parker once, like, you know, well, why the heroin?
Yeah.
And he said, because it makes you think that you play better.
Ugh.
Now, I don't know, I don't want this just to be about your dad. You're here, I want to talk to you, but like you've been a musician, I'm sure you've, you know, I've experimented with drugs, I'm sure you have, obviously you have a family history of it. Do you think is that just a fallacy? Do you think it does get you to a place creatively as a musician that you can't get to without it?
I do.
Yeah.
I definitely do. I mean, I can't speak for dad what it did for him, but he did say that he heard and saw and felt different things when he took acid and when he smoked pot. And, you know, who knows if Good Vibrations would have been written? Who knows if California
right.
Girls or The Warmth of the Sun or God Only Knows would have been written? We don't know that.
Yeah.
But I think that he... I think because it was just that time where people were experimenting. Yeah. He just was on the bus with everybody else doing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then unfortunately, it sort of, I don't know if it opened. I mean, who knows? We don't know what drugs do to the brain. We know they kill brain cells, but it opened up great parts and dark parts.
Right.
And, you know, he has, there's mental illness in on both sides of my family.
Oh, really?
And, you know, it's like, I think that he, we know now that he has, he's in such a great place, and he's managed with the combination of good therapy and the right medication for somebody like him who does hear voices and and can be high and low, high, low. And I have the similar thing. I've always had like a chronic low grade depression. And, you know, that's why it's, I think that's why I have a weight problem. It's like, I can't give up that comfort that food gives me. And, you know, being healthy is another story. But, you know, like I remember when I used to smoke, I was such a stoner. Oh my God. I
really?
Used to, oh God.
In the band, like even before that, as a kid.
Yeah. Well,
but it was
like,
around the house, right?
Well, it was around the house. I mean, they had parties and I would take a puff off the joint. Like my mom actually said, you want a hit? I was like 7 years old.
And who's at the party? I can imagine like anybody who's anybody.
Everyone was there. I remember this writer who wrote that, Jackie DeShannon. She wrote that great song about the mountain. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, she, a great songwriter. And we had everybody there. I mean, one day mom's like, hey, you know, Sean Cassidy's downstairs. You want to go say hi? And he was like my idol. I was freaking out.
Yeah.
So we had this picture of me with Sean Cassidy. My cheeks are bright red, you know, meeting Sean Cassidy. But it was just so just unexpected. Anything that, you know, it was nuts.
Yeah.
Nothing was normal about my
upbringing.
Well,
you came home one day, you were saying before we started, and your dad's in the pool with who?
Oh, Keith Moon. Yeah.
From The Who.
From The Who. Keith Moon comes over and they're like, they thought it was a great idea to be fully clothed and jump in the pool. And who knows what they were high on, you know.
Right.
But that's, my mom would come home and it's just, she just didn't know what to expect. And we didn't either. So, you know.
Do you think that had a long term, is that a good thing for you or a bad thing for you?
No, I don't think it was good.
Yeah.
I don't. There was no, I never had that loving figure. You know, my grandfather was great and almost took my father's place. But the great news is years later, my dad, and this was like right when I was, I would say about 30 years old, I'm 45. He said to me, I am so sorry for not being there as a father. I've loved you. You are, he said to me, you have the most beautiful face I've ever seen. He's so sweet. He said that. And it was like that did it for me. I went, okay, now I can forgive. I'm not going to hold on to this shit anymore because there's no point.
No, I mean, just everybody does it the best with what they got.
Yeah.
And God only knows, like, he was in a blender, right? You're in this, like, you've got pressure from people want to make money off of you and record companies and this and that, and the fans want something.
Yep.
I can only imagine.
And still.
To this day. And so creatively, I'm fascinated with your process of like creating and writing music, right? You guys have been huge and you've come back together and you're doing this great tour. So how do you work as a group? And how do you work individually when you're writing music? Do you hear the harmony first? Do you hear, like, how does that, do the lyrics come first? Does it depend on the song? Because I am not musically talented. I told you before we went on the air.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated that you people can hear that shit and then turn it into that.
I know, it's a trip, right?
Yeah.
It is.
And what did you learn from your dad? And again, I don't want this just to be about him, but like for your process, what did you take away from being around him and seeing his process? And what is your process?
Well, from a young age, I mean, there was always music in the house.
Right.
So I think Pet Sounds was released in 1969. I'm not sure, I could be wrong. Or no, it was 66, I think. But, you know, in those years, I think his greatest music was written. And I know that when I don't know how he did it. He always describes it like it just came from God. I always say, because I said to him, how did you write all those songs? And he said, it was just God. So I think he just heard something. I don't even understand that kind of stuff. For me, I was raised, my parents, when they were still married, they got divorced when I was 11. But, you know, I grew up listening to their favorite music, which was like The Carpenters, Fleetwood Mac, you know, Frank Sinatra, everything from Bad Company to, it was just like such a plethora. And there was always music playing. And I heard him play Rhapsody in Blue, you know, the Gershwin tune every single day. And also, of course, Phil Spector, Be My Baby, was like every fucking day.
Really?
That song, Be My Baby, was playing every day.
Well, the influence of the harmonies on that, yeah.
Major. Yeah. So, and the Eagles and stuff too. So I grew up hearing all these harmony bands, and I became obsessed with harmony. So I would, the Beach Boys and, you know, the Eagles and the Beach Boys were the two groups that really influenced me. And not that I would ever compare Wilson Phillips to the Beach Boys, but it was like I was the one who in eighth grade got everybody together for like talent contests and say, we're going to sing Peaceful Easy Feeling right now. You're going to take the low, you're going to take the middle, wow, you're going to take the high, and I would give everybody their part.
Right.
And so I feel like some of his musical, the ability to hear harmony was passed down to me.
Yeah. And is that what you start with usually when you're writing a song of your own, or does
it's more like somebody will play some chords, like I'll play some chords on the piano and then...
whatever it is.
Yeah, like I'll just play like, my dad actually taught me how to play the piano. So I play his same style with like the octave on the bass and then the hand. I don't know how to say it the right way, like, you know, yeah, music theory.
So just so you know, so we're sitting at a table. The left hand is on the
spread.
Right.
Then the pinky and the thumb are like on an octave. And then the right hand is playing the chords, you know. So I would play like his style. And then I would just, you know, a melody would come. You know, and with no words, it'd be like da 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 da, and then all of a sudden, it'd be like, you know, and then I would match a word to it, and then somebody else, like a partner. I always like to co-write. I've never written a song from start to finish ever in my life.
Who have you done most of your writing with? Is there one person in particular?
Well, China and Wendy, yeah, and Glenn Ballard. I mean, yeah, Glenn, our producer, who worked, you know, with everyone from Michael Jackson, Alanis Morissette, everyone.
And why do you like...
co-writing?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I just don't have the confidence. Mm-hmm. I really, truly don't. I'm so intimidated by everything, and you feel like there's so many songs that have been written. It's like, how the fuck do you do? I'm going to do something, you know, that nobody's ever done. I don't think so.
It's the same thing when you write a joke, by the way. You go, wait, has anybody done that? Probably somebody's done. Like, you just put it through so many filters that it stops being fun.
Yes.
So then how do you let go of that and just go, fuck it, I like it, I'm going to go with this?
Right.
Like, when do you stop and give yourself permission to just go?
When I co-write, when we've co-written songs, like we wrote Release Me, it was the first song we ever wrote together, and Wendy and China. It's the only song we've ever written, the three of us, and it was a number one hit. And it was so, like, just a such a great flowing process at China's mom's piano, and it was really fast.
And tell people, just so that if they don't know, we're talking about amazing pedigree in Wilson Phillips. China Phillips, is the direct lineage of the Mamas and the Papas, which was a huge, huge band in the 60s and 70s.
And John and Michelle.
Yep, just, and still to this day, they're still playing. What did China bring to the equation that, and along with the Wilson sisters, in terms of the Mom and the Papa's influence and her own influence in this sort of collaboration that you guys have been doing?
Well, China is like really great at melodies. And so she basically wrote Hold On, and I wrote a portion of it, but she wrote most of it, and Glenn Ballard wrote all the music. And so she actually, I was really pissed, she took the tape home that Glenn made. He made a musical tape, a track, and said, because sometimes if we were busy, he would give us a musical track and say, you know, go on your own and see if you can write like a verse or a chorus. And sometimes we'd come the next day, did you think of anything? And we'd put our minds together, and that's how some of the songs were actually written.
Oh, wow.
Separately like that. But she took the Hold On track, went home, and basically wrote the whole thing about her sobriety and, you know, like one day at a time type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what that song is based on. If you could just hold on for one more day.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was great. And how could I was like jealous and angry that she wouldn't include us. But I also thought, I'm not going to argue. This is a fucking great song.
Well, I mean, you know, some of the best, there are some parallels to comedy. I think some of the best jokes that get written have come from a very personal place. And maybe if you were involved in that part of the process, you would have gotten in the way of this cathartic thing that she needed to write.
She did. That's a great thing to say, because she needed, this is what spewed out of her.
Right.
And it had to. It was about her own struggles. And wow, that song has really, really resonated with a lot of people.
To the point where, we talked about this, you were told secretively, show up for a Judd Apatow movie.
Right.
Not knowing what was going on.
Yep.
And fill in the rest.
Well, we were asked, does Wilson Phillips want to appear in a Judd Apatow movie? And we were like, well, you know, I don't care if it's about hemorrhoids. We're there.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
It's like, my God, anything, you know?
Is it porn? We don't care. As long as it's got his name on it.
I've done Playboy. Trust me, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Jesus. So, like, you know, it was awesome. We show up and it was a summer night, actually. And we had the best time. We had no idea what it was about. And they were so secretive. They wouldn't tell us.
Right.
And so we were in the makeup trailer with Melissa McCarthy and Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig. And everybody was so cool and nice. They gave away nothing. They didn't tell us anything. The director comes in and he says, okay, so we're going to go out there and this is a wedding scene. And you guys, you know, all we can tell you is that your music is like the favorite of the bride and the bridesmaid. So the maid of honor. So you're going to go out and sing Hold On. And we said, okay. So we got out there and we sang Hold On about 20 times.
This is Bridesmaids.
This is Bridesmaids. Right. And it was, you know, we got none of the vibe. Bah! We got none of the vibe. It was just like the wedding scene. There was water. We were like, it filmed on top of water in the middle. And then, and it was like really hot and they had this huge fan in between takes blowing up my ass because I was free. I was so hot. I was like, oh, God, cool me down. And then, Melissa McCarthy was just so funny. Her body language. I never knew who she was. I didn't know who she was.
Yeah. She's been around it's funny because you go home. I'm from Rhode Island, Italian family. When are you going to get your own TV show? Oh yeah. I'll just pick up. I should call NBC and say I'm ready now.
Right.
They have no idea that the trenches that you play in. Say with you guys, I'm sure, you know, for years and years and hone that ability. And people say, oh, she came out of nowhere, but you know, she paid her dues.
She did.
Yeah, she's a real great physical comedian in the spirit of like some of the great physical comedians, male or female.
Yes. Yeah. She's so gifted. She's just so, and I remember talking to her in the trailer before we filmed our scene. And I thought to myself, her facial expressions alone, I said, you are so funny. We were instantly, you know, I mean, of course, you know, two overweight girls were like, hi, I'm your best friend right away. You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly. Are you going to finish that? No.
Oh my God. So it was awesome.
But you look great, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
You do.
You know,
you look great.
I'm always, I'm up down.
Hey,
this is the truth.
All of us have our thing.
Yeah. But, so that was a blessing because it really opened the door for us. You know, it really, really opened the door again. And now there's like a whole new set of fans.
Yeah.
It's really that.
But it speaks to the look. Judd Apatow has great taste, and it speaks to the quality of what you do. So you know, take credit. You know what I mean? If you were kind of this schlocky, flash in the pan kind of thing. So when you're writing this music, you're writing it with other people. You're hearing the harmony. Do you know this one's special at the end? Do you have a sense, or how often are you like? I thought that was going to be good and it wasn't. And I thought that one that was sucked ended up being the hit. Like do you ever have a sense of that?
You know, it's funny because there's a difference between writing, arranging, and producing.
Tell people for people who aren't musically inclined, what the difference is.
All right. Like I don't have all these fancy terms, but I can tell you how I know it. Right. I know it like writing is the melody, the words and the music put together. Right.
Right.
Okay. An arrangement is kind of like, do you speed up the verses? What's the tempo? You know, when do the voices come in? When do harmonies come in?
So that's when you'll hear Frank Sinatra say, this song was arranged by Nelson Riddle, who
did
a lot of it. Like, but that sometimes he'll mention another arranger. So if you compare those two songs, words are the same, music's the same, but there's a tempo, a vibe.
Totally.
One might be a little more upbeat. Another one might be, okay.
That's arrangement.
I'm learning something.
You are. You got it. You got it. Like, for instance,
this is what I always wanted to know. I always see musicians interviewed for 5 minutes on TV and no one ever asked
that. Right. It's interesting stuff. It's cool. Like, okay, like for instance, Go Your Own Way, the Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah.
Great, like really cool, rocky, good, you know. And we did it on an album called California, and China said, I have an idea. Let's slow it down to a ballad.
Hmm.
And that's arrangement. And it came out great.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of arrangement.
Now there are some songs that don't slow down well to ballads, I remember.
Yeah.
And I guess it's hard to figure out what until you try it, or is it generally?
I don't think
like a type
I like big, but you know I cannot
really?
Lie.
Because I get married
you
to that.
Other brother can't. No, I don't think that would work, Right. No. But, you know, I mean, like, but a producer comes in and says, you know what? Sing that louder. You know what? Put more of a cry into it when you sing. You know, be edgier. The producer's.
It's almost like a director in a film.
Yes, yeah. It is.
It's like, and seeing something, maybe she's holding back or you're off today.
Producers pull stuff out of you, you know, and they help enhance your performance. So, you know, and for me with like Hold On, for instance, I feel like I really was a big part of that arrangement of like, you know, when the harmonies come in. So, you know, China, I know this pain. And then the harmonies, why do you lock yourself up in these chains? So it comes in. I thought that's a great place to put the harmony there. And I think that's what makes Wilson Phillips, you know, not tooting a horn, but just like that. That was our genesis. That's the real nucleus of our group. It's harmony. And we started out on the carpet smoking bong loads. You know, this is when I was big stoner, smoking bong loads and like learning how to harmonize together. Right. And the truth is, one day my mom came downstairs. We were 18 years old. We were just out of high school. Wendy was still in high school, right. 16.
Yeah, and you and China grew up together since you were the age of 3.
No, since we were born.
Oh. Because we're talking the Beach Boys and the Mamas and the Papas and the Who and the whatever, the Stones. You're all hanging
all
out.
All hanging out.
Oh, and by the way, there are these kids, these rugrats. Who are now going to grow up together. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. So John and Michelle John and my dad used to play basketball together. And Michelle and my mom used to bring, you know, the two of us in their
I don't see your dad playing basketball.
He was good.
Really? He's tall.
He's 6'3", yeah.
Yeah.
So he was a great athlete. Oh, my God. Dad was a really, really a great baseball player, too. Anyway, so where were we? So, like, we were sitting on the carpet getting really stoned and we were singing to, I think it was Stevie Nicks, one of her solo records, Wild Heart maybe. And my mom came down and she goes, what are you guys doing? And I said, we're singing harmony, mama, you know? She goes, you guys sound really great together. Wow. Now this is like, we've known her our whole lives.
Yeah.
But China said to me, teach me how to sing harmony. I want to know. Cause Wendy and I could just sing any, I'd be like, take the high harmony, Wendy. I'll take the low. And we could just do it. China still can't do that.
So when you say, I didn't even see, now I just learned something. You can teach
yes.
How does that work?
Okay. All right. Can you carry a tune at all?
Not very well, but let's try. We'll see.
Okay. What's a song that you like? Like anything. You're so cute right now. Your cute smile. You're getting embarrassed.
I am. I 99 bottles of beer. No. Let's say Summer Wind.
Summer Wind. Wait, who sings
Frank
that?
Frank Sinatra.
Oh, how does that go?
The Summer Wind.
Oh, fuck. I don't know it.
Is blowing in.
I don't know it.
Across the sea. How about New York, New York? Does that work?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to pick something. Oh, well, let's pick a Fleetwood Mac song.
Okay, how about
how
about Go Your Own Way?
Yeah, great.
Okay, so you just sing, I want you to sing, you can go your own way.
You can go your own way.
Okay, you sing that, and I'm going to sing a harmony to that.
Okay.
Okay, now, but here's the trick, though.
Yeah.
If you sing that, you can't listen to what I'm doing because you're going to wind up going off. You got to stick to your melody. So you can go your own way.
You can go your own way. You can go your own way. You can go your own.
No, no. You can go your own way. You're going to sing that. You can go. Sing it with me.
You can go your own way.
Okay, you sing that and I'll do a harmony. Ready?
You can go your own way. Oh, I see.
So I'm going to sing, you can go your own way. And you're going, you can go your own way.
Oh.
And that's the melody. And I'm going, you can go your own way. That's a low harmony.
Wow. That's intricate.
So
I have to stay in my
you have to stay on your melody.
Otherwise, I'm going to stay. You can go your own way. Yeah, I'm not doing it very well because I have a terrible voice. But.
And then there's the high. You know, you can go, you can go your own way. That'd be the high. Mm. So it's like, it's all these, my husband took music theory. He knows all that stuff. I don't even know. It's just inside of me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, because you're just around it as a kid. The guy. I mean, the Beatles were influenced by your dad and the Beach Boys. And would you do anything for inspiration or do you do anything for inspiration? Is writing in a certain place good for you? You know, whether it's, you know, your own house.
I've written in the bathtub, the shower. I get a lot of melodies in the shower.
I have a lot of jokes written on napkins and things next to my, like, just don't know.
Yeah.
My wife is like, I can't stand this. I go, because I can't throw anything out because everything's got something scribbled on it.
Exactly. Well, you know, my phone, I sing into my phone, like an idea for the phone.
Right.
And then like, I'll look back and go, that fucking sucked. What was I thinking? You know? And then sometimes it's great. I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, it's pure inspiration. And sometimes it's really spontaneous and sometimes it's forced and you can force a good thing and sometimes you can't.
How was the transition from, you know, hanging around the house singing and then you're with your best friends in the safety of that and then suddenly you're going to go perform for 50 people and then 100 people and then thousands and thousands of people? Was that an issue? I don't sense, given your personality, that that was an issue, but
right.
What would any transition issues of like getting up in front of people and doing it?
Well, I mean, I remember touring with the Beach Boys and like getting up in front of a couple hundred thousand people and feeling, I like this. This is really fun.
You would get up.
Yeah. The Beach Boys would have the Beach Boys kids come up during Good Vibrations. And Uncle Carl used to say the part where it's gotta keep those loving good vibrations. And then he would look at us and say, okay, come on. And we would run out. Gotta keep that good.
That's adorable.
You know, it was awesome. So I remember going, I love it here. I love it.
Yeah.
And I wanted it, you know. And, but it really, after Wendy and China and I started writing songs and singing together, it wasn't fame and it wasn't money. It was really,
come on,
I swear to God.
I want fame.
Swear to God.
I want money. Stop.
I mean, I wanted my Louis Vuitton bags, but the thing is that
you can get those for $20 on the streets of New York, Chinatown.
It's so funny. I was totally blown away, but I knew that.
Well, is it because you were born into fame in a way that that was less?
It was.
You know, my father put floors in for a living, so I wasn't. So that's maybe why I'm enamored with it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
I think so. I didn't care about that. It's like we were, I was kind of born into this. I was already famous as being the daughter, but I didn't care about that. It actually made me feel uncomfortable. And, but I knew I wanted to be an actress, you know, I mean, I was always on stage.
Oh, is that right?
Always acting in the school plays. They always thought they hired an actress and it was always me, like, you know, the old lady, but really convincing, you know? And, but of course, you know, musical theater, a major production is, I was always singing, but you know, our first gig was, where was it? It was at like Dodger Stadium. It was like 55,000 people. It was for a Kiss FM concert. And we sang a song called The Dream Is Still Alive. And it's on our first record. And my mic wasn't working. And so like the first verse, I thought I was doing great, but nobody could fucking hear me. I was like singing, you know, to myself. It was going in the stratosphere. But I feel like we were going to six cities a day and we sold more record. We sold 13 million records. The first record sold 13 million.
Unbelievable.
Worldwide. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And was it overwhelming at that point? Were you sort of like, was it, wow, this is a lot for, you're what, how old are you at that point?
21.
Wow, you kid.
And we were so tired. And it was like, we had to go. That was the time when you had to go to every radio station and kiss the program director's ass. To get them to add the record.
Still
so,
then?
So I was really? Like, I don't care if I have to, whose dick I have to suck, I'm going to get played on this radio station.
I did get a sense when I met you that you sucked a lot of dick. By the way, if you told me that I was going to say that to Carney Wilson 48 hours ago, I'd be, you're crazy. But that's what's so great about
you. Now
you
know the real me. I'm out of my skull. But like, you know, it was so surreal that we were selling 100,000 records a week. And I remember being on a bus in the middle of, I don't know, Tennessee, and hearing the songs for the first time on the radio, and just, we were so excited. It is so, and then like nominated for Grammys, and I mean, we were nominated for Best New Artist with Mariah Carey.
Unbelievable.
And Mariah Carey won Best New Artist, and you know, it was awesome. But just, I just can't believe it happened.
When you have to go to those radio stations and kiss the program director's ass, explain to people what, I mean, what you're going out to dinner, you're schmoozing them so that they like you as a person and as a group so that they'll more apt to play your music. Like, what happens?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
It depends on, like, some of them were just dicks. Yeah. Like, their personality, they were just dicks. Yeah. And then
let me guess, like a small man with a lot of power. power.
Right.
And he abuses it and is
and
like
a very tiny penis. Yes. Yes. Right.
Well, you would know. You've obviously sucked a lot of them.
Shut up. No. But yeah, like, so it would be like, okay, we're going to go, like, you know, we've tried so hard. The record company would say, we've tried so hard. We got to get this because it's a P1. There was P1, P2, and P3. And P1 stations would influence other P1s. And if you got a P1, you were lucky. And it was, you know, more listeners. So we had, they would say, well, we got this ad, but Milwaukee or, you know, or New York City, they won't add you. Z100, that was always the toughest, was Z100.
In New York.
Yeah. So I remember going there. So you know, they would set up like a charity thing. It was all politics, but they would set up like a charity lunch and you'd go and you'd totally kiss their ass and they would put me next to them so that during lunch I could charm them. And just, you know, but just be funny and real because I could get along with a bum on the street. You know what I mean?
Of the three of you in the group, you were the one with the biggest personality. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I wasn't the looker. I mean, I was, you know,
no,
I was
come
like,
on, no,
well,
don't.
That's the truth. I mean, it's the truth, you know, Wendy's like quiet Aphrodite. China's like, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
And with the blonde.
Here we are.
Yeah.
By the way, she just grabbed her boobs.
And trust me, she sucked more dick than I have.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So,
slutty slut.
I love her. I call her the slut. It's great. We're just,
I would think though, like the three of you on the road, single,
like,
and
men,
like, whatever.
And we couldn't stay at a hotel long enough. We were at six cities a day.
Yeah, but come on, guys. Do women have groupies?
Boyfriends. We all had boyfriends. We do have groupies, yeah.
Well, were you loyal to your boyfriend at the time?
Like dork groupies.
No, really?
Well, I mean, the guys that like, you're in love. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Seriously.
Borderline gay guys.
Oh, and the gay, forget the gays. Yeah. They were, obsessed.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and still are. Oh, they're my favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you're like a big, like, fag hag kind of band.
Oh, me? Oh, the best blowjob tips ever came from my gay friends. I said, go get a dildo right now and show me how to give the best fucking head ever. And let me tell you something. I went back home and I used the tips on my husband.
Yeah.
He screamed, squealed like a pig.
He must have said, have you been practicing on somebody else?
He goes, where the fuck did you learn how to do that? I swear to God. We were living.
It's from a gay guy?
It's from a gay guy.
That's hilarious.
It was genius.
You are right, though. If you're going to go to, if anybody knows a dick.
Please. It's perfect. How smart is that? Yeah. I said, I know you have a dildo up there. You probably have 10. Go get one of them and come down here and show me the best. I learned some good stuff.
The master has, the master teaches the student and then the student becomes the master.
Exactly. How do we go from radio stations?
I don't know. Well, because I'm fascinated by that life. Like what? I mean, there aren't how many, you know, big female bands that sort of made it big and have been big. And like, I'm just curious if it's the same kind of thing that you hear about with guy bands, like, you know, the people throwing themselves.
I don't think it's the same thing. No, I don't. Yeah. I think the boy bands are different. And also, like, if we had more like Joan Jett music, I mean, we probably would have attracted more of a, you know, edgier crowd. But, you know, this was just like, you know, my mommy and my aunt, we all love your songs and it's wonderful. But it's a different kind of audience.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for every one of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So did you always have the acting? Now this is happening. Your life's blowing up, but you obviously, acting was your thing, and I could see it. You have a big personality. What were you sort of always saying? Well, I'll ride this for a while, and then I'll shift to acting, or is just the acting was just something I did at the time, and I'm really focused on the music. Where did that? How did that play out?
Well, after high school, I got an agent, and I went out for some jobs, and I did some acting, little acting roles. Mm-hmm. You know, I did some music. It's funny, my little acting history, you know, I was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch and I was in some music videos and I was going to be in Janet Jackson, one of her, I forgot what the song was, but I got sick and I couldn't do it. But, you know, I did a NBC miniseries called The 60s and I played Mama Earth, just kind of got my toes into it. But I didn't, it wasn't calling to me like music was, you know? I just kind of said, well, one day, the right role is going to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel that the right role is out there. And I think it's probably like a Woody Allen, like real, like, you know, Jewy, like kind of complaining psycho.
Or Italian. I could see.
Or
you,
maybe,
you
yeah.
remind me
yeah.
of like some of my Italian.
Right.
You remind me of my sister-in-law. My sister's very kind of big personality.
Boisterous,
Yeah, and like energized. eyes and like fire in your eyes. And I can totally see, like, you know. Yeah, but like Oprah does that. Oprah like picks her spots. She finds like the perfect role, and then she gets an Emmy, Oscar nomination.
Amazing,
like, you know. And she's good. Like, I don't think she gets it because she's just Oprah. Like, she's actually good in it.
She is.
And I could see you like, but the talk thing. You're great on the talk. You're really good. You know,
I just love people. You know, I don't know. I just have a natural.
I have a segment for you on the talk. Is blowjob tips.
Oh my God.
You can
for
have,
daytime television?
Yeah, you can make. We'll work around that. We'll bleep it.
I actually thought about that today. I'm going to work it in there somehow. Because I tell you, that Julie Chen, you know, she's brilliant at what she does. She's so funny. Behind the scenes is great. Those girls are awesome.
Yeah.
And she's a smart cookie and has a great sense of humor, too.
So. Well, I think you're good at it, too, probably, because you've worked in a band. I mean, the problem with comedians is we don't usually play well with others, you know?
Right.
And
what? Why?
Well, I think it's because we're insecure. Yeah. We really want the limelight. It's not very functional to go up into a... If I said to you, on paper, this is what you're going to do. You're going to walk into a room that you've never been in before.
Right.
With hundreds of people who you've never met before. And for 45 minutes to an hour, have this compulsion to make them laugh. You would say, that's really fucked up. And so... there's, I think, a dysfunctionality more. I think all performers are slightly dysfunctional, right? We want to entertain and whatever that is, that's good or bad. But I think comedians, a lot, some, I can't say all of us, some, but a fair number just don't play well with others, but which is another reason why I think it's much harder for musicians.
Because
you've got to, you're only good as your weakest link. And if you don't have a great relationship, and had you been in other bands before Wilson Phillips?
No.
Had you, were you just, so you were fortunate that you just found each other, you grew
so
up
lucky.
Together.
So lucky.
Yeah. But I think that that's why that works for you probably in a talk show scenario with a group of five women. Does it get catty? Does it get like...
No. It's too produced to get catty. But I mean, it could. But, you know, like I remember when I... After Wilson Phillips disbanded, China left and went solo, I was offered a talk show. So I moved to New York and I did my own show. It was for one season.
It's around the time Ricky Lake
had exactly.
A show too, right?
And actually that year there were 22 new talk shows. So it was the worst fucking year.
Good timing,
Great
Carney.
Timing. Sucked. So it was, that was the most stressful thing I've ever done. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that every day it was like, what was the rating? What was the rating? And the pressure was all on me.
Yeah.
And it was really intense. And then it was funny because they said, well, we love you because, this was Telepictures and very successful. They said, you know, we love you because you are overweight. You are real. You represent.
You're every woman.
Yeah,
that nonsense,
yeah. You're relatable. And we like how outspoken you are and that you have an opinion. And then it was so funny because 2 weeks goes by and they said, we have to have a meeting. And they pulled me in the office and they said, look, you're too opinionated. And it looks like you're gaining weight. I said, I'm the fucking out of here. Are you kidding me? You told, right. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, but how do you tell, what am I going to say to a wife beater? I love you. Good job. What the hell? I mean, I said to them, because I actually said, and of course they couldn't air it. I said, you know, you're a real cocksucker. You know that?
You said this to a guest?
Oh, yeah.
Did you really?
Because you're really a cocksucker. You know, you're a fuck. What makes you think that you can take your fist and punch a woman in her face? What gives you that right?
What did he
say? And he'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? He had no teeth, you know, and he had a cast on his arm, this guy. And so I'd hear in my ear with the IFB saying, you know, they're talking to you. Carney, stop. You know, it's...
Well, what do they want you to say to the guy?
I love your good job. I mean, I don't even know, nice like... Job.
Show us how you hit her.
But this was really... This is how fucked up it was. It was like... Before I would go on with the guests, they would take me to the wives' green room, and I'd have to go in there and say, it's horrible. He hits you, you know? What does he do to you? I'm so sorry. I'm so glad you're here. What are you going to tell him today? You've got to tell him that you're not going to take it anymore. And they would go, okay, now we're going to go see the wife beaters. And they wanted me to say, you like to hit, you like to give her,
oh,
you like to punch her in the face once in a while, right? Swear to God. And I actually did that because I wanted to surprise them. I wanted to catch them off guard. Because I am, you know, I'm not, I can't tolerate that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was like the right gig for me, but it wasn't the right forum, you know?
Why did you guys disband at that point in time? Did you just hit a wall musically? Or you just, getting on each other's nerves?
No, it was really, we were fighting constantly and I couldn't take, China was just not wanting to be in a group. She wanted to be a solo artist, and we had to respect her for that.
Well, I'm watching the show that you guys did a couple of years ago. You could see that play out sometimes, the tensions.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. It's a family, and you're working together, and there's pressure. You seem to be the mother hen-ish of the group. Is that fair?
Yeah.
And why did that just sort of evolve? Obviously, you're older than your sister, so I understand that dynamic. But why, as between you and China, did that dynamic evolve?
I think that it's just our personalities, and it's kind of always the role that I've had. You know, she relies on me for certain things, and I rely on her.
Hmm.
And the reason why we're still able to work together is because we know that no matter if we're arguing or fighting about something stupid or something serious, the minute we open up and sing together, everything goes away. It's miraculous. It doesn't matter if we're in a huge fight. If we start to sing, then it's like, oh, it's like getting in a fight with
this
your brother.
And it reminds you of why you're doing this and going through all of this.
And then nothing else could be more important than this. Let's let it go.
Yeah, Jay Leno actually said, you know, I don't get paid. I never got paid all this money to deal with being on stage. It's all the bullshit off stage, you know.
Oh.
Like, so you can't lose sight of that thing.
Yep.
And so it was just time to kind of break apart, go your separate way a little bit.
I went to a
And what about Wendy?
Deep depression for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like blew all the rest of the money.
See, that's fascinating to me because of anybody, I don't mean this as a slight on Wendy or China. You have so many options, your personality, acting. I could see you just going, I'll go try this other thing, or I'll keep doing music.
Didn't know what to do. It was miraculous that 4 months later, Warner Brothers called me and said, we want you to do it. I went on Howard Stern.
Was that a more functional family than you had growing up with, do you think, the three of you? And then maybe did that scare you that, I'm being amateur psychologist, but did that scare you that, like, okay, this is a family that was really like a family to me, the three of you, that you didn't have because your dad had his issues, and now this family is broken apart?
I couldn't fathom that somebody would walk away from something that was so successful.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
And it's so hard to capture that lightning in a bottle a second time.
I just couldn't believe it. Yeah. I was totally bowled over. And, you know, the record company was livid. And Glenn, our producer, we cried together. And so they said, well, fuck it. We're just going to do it without her. And it was hostile. But the good news is that Wendy and I wrote a really great Christmas song called Hey Santa, which sold like 250,000 records and is played every year. And is actually one of the most popular played songs every single year.
Wow.
During Christmas time.
Now, you said you blew a lot of your money?
Oh, I blew it all.
What'd you blow it on?
Oh, my God. Oh, shit. This is going to
be... Chia pets everywhere?
No. I spent like 55 grand I spent on paint in the interior of my house.
What?
Oh, yeah. Like, I would... Stupid things like that. Like, I would go... Like,
you know, you're right. Mental illness does run in your family.
Totally.
You spent 50... How much... What is it? Gold paint?
No, it actually was like these two gay men who died of AIDS. Bless their hearts. They're like, we want to paint like a, you know, this gold leaf, you know, leopard fireplace.
See, they were taking advantage of you.
Well, you know...
Ching, ching, yeah.
Yeah, it was the best fireplace you ever saw in your life. But the thing is...
Was it a lot of dicks painted on it?
Oh, I wish. it was like stupid stuff. Lots of jewelry.
Stuff to make you feel...
Totally.
Right?
And bad investments. I did not get lucky with real estate.
Is that right?
Really, really unlucky.
Whoa, it's like...
I lost money beyond... I always bought a home in the height and then like sold and it was the worst. Every time there was like a little, like, you know, the fall of the market, that's when I would sell the house and I'd lose money.
Oh, my God.
Nightmare.
Were you writing at all? Were you doing your own writing of music at that time? Or you just kind of like...
No, I went into TV. I mean, that's when I went into television.
Yeah.
And then I had the surgery. Then I got so depressed, I got very unhealthy and got up to 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Then I had the gastric bypass and lost 150.
Yeah.
And that kind of gave another resurgence of sort of exposure, maybe. And then me wanting to help other people with the same obesity issue.
Yeah.
And that really...
And you did that online. A lot of people should know that, which was like a really eye-opening thing.
It was the first surgery online.
Yeah. And like, it was... I don't want to say taboo, but it was not a surgery that was even done a lot at that time. It's much more common now than it was then, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been around for like 45 years, except this was a laparoscopic. It was the first one to be done live on the internet.
But people were more in the closet about it. Yeah, like, it's not the kind of thing where you'd be like, it was almost, you know.
Like a shameful thing to do.
Yeah, like you see somebody in 3 months say they lost 150 pounds. Nah, I've just been running a lot. Oh, okay, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, that's a crock of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I get really mad when they say that it's the easy way out. There's nothing easy about it. Yeah. Nothing was easy. I worked so hard to lose that weight, and it did help, you know, curb the hunger, but it was hard work.
Yeah. And then when you're now sort of, you're touring, you're writing music. By the way, tell people the story you were saying before we get on the air. I don't want to forget this, that in your house growing up, there were just things would show up, and sand showed up at your house.
The doorbell rang. This is really out there. The doorbell rang, and this guy was like, "Yeah, I have your sand." And mom was like, my mother said, what are you talking about? We have your 5 tons of sand. They put, like, my dad ordered 5 tons of sand to be dumped into the living room so he could put his grand piano on there and know what it's like to write music in his living room as if he was on the beach.
Oh my God.
As if he were, you know, with the waves. And so my mom was like, 1 weekend, 3 days, that's it. And then it's out of here. You know, it's bugs and all. Who puts, right? It's crazy. But, you know,
have to have like sound effects of like seagulls and ocean and
I don't know.
Like, and a guy oiling up on the beach.
I love it. Who knows what was written? You know, I don't even remember. I'm going to ask my mom. I have to know like what song was written during that time. All I know is that I once challenged my dad. I said, go write a song about a cigarette. And he went and wrote a song about a cigarette just out of nowhere. And he's such a special guy, you know. It's mind blowing. There were so many. I just remember him, like, in the middle of the night, he woke me up and said, you want to eat some cereal? It was like 2 a.m. And we went down to the kitchen, and we had a raisin bran with half and half. And we would eat together, but he literally...
With half and half.
But there's a couple funny stories about him. One time, first of all, I went to fat camp every summer because, like, God knows, it started early
you had issues early?
Oh, yeah. I was 6 years old. It started to come on, and we checked my thyroid, and I would go to, like, Weight Watchers camp every summer.
So were you inactive? Like, were you the kid that didn't do, like, a lot of sport activities as a kid?
No, I actually was very active. I played volleyball. I roller skated. Wow. I just ate everything in sight and then would sneak food. Oh, I remember I used to lay on the floor and eat cake mix, like just raw cake mix.
Wow.
I was constantly searching. And then, you know, the hostess, that was my fucking, God damn it.
I'm telling you, you got to love it though.
So God.
What are we talking about?
And the Twinkie and the cupcakes, the ho-hos. I'm going to get a tattoo of a Twinkie. That's what I decided. And I think I'm going to put fuck you Twinkie. I swear, I'm not kidding. I think I'm getting a tattoo of a Twinkie. But I was on the hunt for sugar always. But my dad, he did really weird things. Like, one year we drove up to fat camp. I always call it fat camp. I have great stories. But we drove to San Luis Obispo. We had a limousine. China was actually with us. And we stopped and got a hamburger as my last, like, blow it food. Like, we're going to get a big cheeseburger on the way to Weight Watchers camp.
Yeah.
And he took the hamburger, the whole hamburger, shoved the whole thing in his mouth really fast, and kept it on one side of his cheek the whole way up to San Luis Obispo. Didn't swallow, didn't chew. Kept it on the side of his fucking mouth, on his cheek, like a chipmunk.
So we were
watching him, and we were just laughing and laughing at him. He didn't even look at us. He just sat there with his eyes closed with this intense look on his face. And China goes, Brian, you know, why did you do that? And because when we got there, he finally just, like, gulped, he swallowed it.
Oh my God.
And we went, what did you do that for? And he went, I wanted to make it last. Like, oh my God, whatever. Just, it's too weird, you know.
But that's him, right? I mean, did you notice a transformation when he was in pure creative mode? Would he transform? Did he become like? Would his face change? Like, could you see an intensity happening? Like, what when you would, I assume you would watch his process a little
bit. I watched it a little bit because for me, I was born in 68. So he was like writing albums called Beach Boys Love You, which is one of my favorites, 15 big ones in the 70s, those records. And I remember him always at the piano and he would like look up and he would close his eyes. And then he was just so intense. He literally would go to the piano, write for a little bit and then walk around the house. He would do like a one-time loop around the house, go back to the piano, walk around. And I always wondered, what is he doing? I think he was thinking about melodies now that I look back on it.
So where did his passion and abilities and brilliant abilities for melody and harmony come from? Where did that, I mean, it's certainly nobody in his family was doing that.
His father, the Wilson brothers, are interesting. Generations back, they were very musical, and one of the Wilsons had like seven boys, and a lot of them were, this is like a long time ago, were musical. So his father Murray was a record producer and really pushed him. Wasn't a great father, but actually really was, in the sense that he believed in my dad and said, you are a natural at this, and he pushed him hard. So I think
it's like parents with sports and kids too, right? Like would A-Rod be A-Rod, or would, you know, Michael Jordan be Michael Jordan?
Right.
You know, like, but what's that? And we're both parents now, and I think about that with my son because he loves baseball.
Yeah.
And he also likes music. Like, how much do you push to the point of dysfunction?
Yeah.
You know, and are you, you must be very conscious of that with your kids. And like,
very. I remember sitting in the bathtub teaching Lola harmony just for my own curiosity. I wanted to know if she was musical. I actually was going to like fucking stab myself if she was like tone deaf. I was praying.
You are not a Wilson.
Oh no!
You sicken me.
I was praying. Oh God, please let her, you know, have the ability.
Yeah.
And it way surpassed my, I couldn't believe it. I still can't get over it.
So your dad has it in his DNA. You have it in your DNA.
Yeah. And my daughter has it.
Some of it for you is learned from being around it, but it's in your DNA.
It is. And it's in my husband's DNA and it's in my daughter's. Lucy's getting there, but Lola's extraordinary. There's something going on there. And I had a psychic tell me that Lola was going to be singing with me professionally. So I'm waiting for that day. I'll be so happy.
What other experiments would your dad do? You talked about wanting to get the sensation of writing on the beach. Why did he want to do that? Why was that important to him? And what was, would you see cool jam sessions with like amazing musicians at the house at any time?
Oh God, I remember one time Paul McCartney came over with
I interviewed him for my podcast, by the way.
How great.
He was the nicest human being on the face of the planet.
He is I love him. Oh my God.
He talked about what you talked about, which is being out front on your own after you're in a band, you know, going from the Beatles to Wings. And he goes, even then, you know, all the fame I had, I felt this pressure like I had to carry it.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were saying Paul McCartney. So he comes over?
He came over and he was wearing all white.
How cool is that?
The coolest. I had such a crush on him. Jesus Christ. I was like, you know, I felt a vagina quiver at like 8 years old.
My vagina would quiver.
He came in and he was wearing all white and these red patent leather, like funky tennis shoes. And he had this, like, that 70s haircut.
Oh, that long.
Right. Going in his face, almost like the babies.
Yeah.
That went back in the day, like their haircut, you know. And he sat at the piano and we sang My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean.
Wow.
He said, what would you all like to sing? You know, I know, let's sing do you know My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean? And we said, okay, My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean. And he's like, My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean. My Bonnie Lies Over the Sea.
It's Paul McCartney.
It was like, I remember it. It was the dad's upright piano. And we went outside and all the children were there. And, you know, Stella, Mary, the little one. And we all ate like... We had snacks. There's pictures of it too. I have pictures of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Remarkable.
And that's like a Saturday.
A typical day.
Jesus Christ.
That was a typical day.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Unbelievable.
I know.
By the way, his concert, I took my son to Fenway Park because he was performing. This was a few weeks after I got to interview him. He's 71. First of all, when I was talking to him, I'm like this close to you. And I was like staring at him, like, oh my God, like, you know, like when a baboon ticks off its mate, like I was that close going, and I'm just staring at the guy and he's had no work. He's a vegan, couldn't be nicer, down to earth. And he does a show Almost 3 hours.
Jesus.
He does every song. I couldn't take a leak. I run to the bathroom. He's, oh, it's Eleanor Rigby. I like stop taking a piss in the middle. So by the way, as a performer, like you always look at that stuff. I'm drinking water all the time. He did not take one sip of water for almost 3 hours. I don't know what he did.
No, what the hell?
Maybe he's a Beatle. Maybe he had some special hydrated thing put in his throat. But like,
oh my God,
just amazing.
I remember just recently. We were at the Hollywood Bowl, and my dad was performing, and he was.
See, how cool is that? Can I interrupt? Like,
what to say that?
Well, like, no, but you don't even say it. Like, like I go, like my dad, like was my dad played basketball. Yeah, my dad was at that. He was playing anyway. Like, amazing,
right?
Amazing,
amazing. Yes,
yes.
So he's singing. God only knows.
Yeah.
And he loves Paul, and Paul loves him. It's like a known thing. They love each other. Mm. And he's in the middle of singing, and this was really, I don't know, the timing was beyond. I don't even know how this happened. I'm near the front, and Dad starts singing, and he goes, all of a sudden, Paul walked in. He entered from like the front down where everybody could see him, and the crowd saw him walk in and they started to cheer, and Dad starts singing, God only knows what I'd be without Paul. And the audience went crazy, and I couldn't believe it. And of course he sat right in back of me. So he comes up, he sits right in back of me, and I turned around and I said, hi, Paul. And he gave me the peace sign with his hands, you know, like that. And then when we got backstage, he grabbed me and kissed my neck.
Oh my God.
He kissed me on the neck, and I was like, holy shit.
Again, a quivering, quivering vagina moment.
Oh my
moment.
God, beyond quivering. it was, oh God.
Earthquake vagina.
No, honestly.
You have an earthquake vagina.
It was Kegel Central. It was so great. And he said to me, I'm following you, and I'm so proud of you. And you know, and then we went backstage, and it was just me and my dad and Paul and maybe like two other people. And Paul gave Dad a rose, and he looked at Dad and he was like, Brian, good vibrations, Brian, good vibrations, Brian.
Oh my God!
You know, and then he looks at it and he's like, oh God, Sergeant Pepper's, man, you know. And it was so cute the way they were just together. You know, it was really
this
cool.
This mutual respect.
Unbelievable.
Two brilliant genius artists. How come they never collaborated? Your dad didn't really collaborate with other artists much, it seems.
Yeah.
Is there a reason? Because he's so particular about what he does and he has his process, you think?
I'm not really sure how to answer that. It could just be, I mean, he has collaborated. And he collaborated with Paul. I think they even wrote a song together.
Yeah,
I just think he's extremely insecure, and I think he's just really, really, believe it or not, very, very insecure.
Well, I think it's insecurity that makes people brilliant. Because it's my wife is like, I'm not saying I'm at the level of your father or Paul McCartney, but my wife is always like, you're never satisfied. You're always saying it's not good enough, and I'm assuming you have some of that. And it fuels like this perfectionist thing that makes it great.
I think you're right.
You know, because like a lot of guys would be like, yeah, good enough.
Exactly.
Let's get some weed and watch some porn.
Sounds good to me.
But you've been amazing. This is so
this
fun.
This is really cool.
This is like a real honor to talk to you.
Thank
and
you.
Learn about you and learn about how to write music and that, you know, you give a great blowjob and you have a quivering vagina.
Isn't that beautiful?
Well, I'm quivering right now.
And
so,
and before we end it, I would like to end it by playing you.
Yes.
One of my farts.
Oh right, I'm so so Carney. Carney names her farts.
Yeah, I do.
You have a lot of farts.
Yeah, I have 100. I've lost my space on my phone.
Okay.
But I record them and name them.
This is so awesome.
Like, I'll hear a fart and I'll be like, oh, that sounds like I said, you know. So I'll play you fuck.
Again, if you told me 48 hours ago, I was going to say the sentence, Carney Wilson names her farts.
You would hear one of my farts,
and
actually.
Now we're going to get to hear.
This one is called fuck, because it goes funk. Get ready.
Play another one. Play another one.
Okay, this one is called Hello.
So I assume you know it's coming and you get everything set up. Or do you have a crew?
No, that's...
Do you have a recording crew ready at your ass?
It's my iPhone. And the goddamn voice memo, I discovered it. I've been recording my farts since I was a little girl. I loved recording my farts until I took X-Lax to try to lose weight and I shit on the recorder. That wasn't good. That's not a lie. But hold on. This one is, hey. Oh, there's so many.
All right, can we just play some more? This okay, is this like one's the most called, this entertaining one's, thing I've heard in years.
This one's called Don't Cry About It. Doesn't that remind you of like being sad?
It does. Right? But everyone makes me think of what you ate to get you to that point.
Oh, fuck. Everything gives me gas. Water gives me gas. Water. Okay, this one's called...
You are truly an artist. You hear sounds...
Isn't that wonderful?
See, this is all about sounds. It just happens to be a fart, but it's
that's
a sound.
What it is. See, this is my theory, and one day I will talk about this publicly because I really believe that people need to celebrate their farts more. I'm so tired of everyone like being embarrassed and we're women, we shouldn't fart. That's bullshit. You know, of course, if it smells, it's fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
But it's gonna smell. You know, I mean...
A little bit.
It has to smell. It's coming out of your asshole. But the thing is that this is what's funny. This is what I can't get over. And I know I'm weird. I know. But I think it's so funny that we have a hole and that we feel something coming, like a bubble. And then we don't know what it's going to sound like. And it could be airy, snappy, you know, loud, right. Soft. And I think it is hysterical. And that's the bottom line. So I thought, you know what? Celebrate and record them.
And you write the name.
And
she
write
writes
the name.
It's on her iPhone. Okay, so I have the same program.
Oh, yeah.
And then it records it with just the date and time. And then you have to literally customize the label. And you give
exactly.
Your,
Sad Mama Ducky.
Let me hear that one.
Sad Mama Ducky. Okay. Okay, wait. I want to give you one that's really, like, loud. Okay, one day, I don't know what the hell I ate. I must have eaten, like, kale or some shit. You know, like kale.
Something that's supposed to be good for you, but and, just produces exactly. Melodious farts.
Oh, my God. The more,
you
like...
You should do an album called Melodious Farts.
I know. Wait, this one's called... This is really appropriate. It's called... Explosion. This is sick. Okay, get ready. Oh my God. Of course, I'm laughing at my own fart. Oh,
yeah. It's brilliant. We're going to sign off on one last fart. You find one. I have been talking with Carney Wilson. You can see her giving blowjob tips on the talk. No. And just a great human being. It's super sweet and super talented. And she names her farts, and we're going to go out on one last fart. You tell us what this one's called. This is like my son and his friends would do this.
I know.
You're like a guy's
I know.
Chick.
I can't help it.
Like, you're like a chick. Like, and you're not like a chick. You're
right.
Like a guy's
yes.
Chick. And like, yeah, I want to go out, drink beer with you and
totally.
Hang out and punch people.
I'm glad I'm sober. I'd be in real trouble.
Right.
Okay, this one's called The Zipper.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was Carney Wilson's asshole.
Woo! Isn't that beautiful?